Welcome to Take Two. One of the things I particularly dislike from an audio point of view,
right,
both on podcasts and radio, is when you listen to someone talking and it's quite clear that they have only just recently finished eating.
Have you only just recently finished eating?
Just recently finished eating.
Is that something that you notice?
An apple and raisin oat bar all the time.
Wow.
You can hear the saliva and... Oh, for heaven's sake, don't do that. Anyway, I have just done that.
Okay.
So I have broken my rule, but I was very hungry and I was trying not to sound like the Northern Line.
There's a broadcaster to whom I've listened for many years who I have often said, it's funny, you can hear their teeth.
Hmm.
But what's happened recently, so this particular broadcaster is now whistling through their teeth. I mean, they're a broadcaster of some age, and no names, no pack drill. But the whistling is becoming quite pronounced. And
is it Zoe Ball?
It is Zoe Ball, yes. And in my car, for some reason, the frequency of the whistle, I can't even do it, of the whistle,
yeah,
is piercing. So it's got to the point that I'm actually just, that's what I'm hearing all the time, is just the whistling.
Also, if someone's voice is too, their mouth is too dry, and you can just have a drink. Sometimes there's a newsreader on Radio 4 who does this. I think, can't anyone hear this stuff?
So what, since we're doing this, what are the irritating things that you and I do?
Other than a long list.
No, but
I don't know.
In terms of that, that's one of the things that I do. I just did it then. I sort of swallow like I'm bilious or something. So if you were doing an impression of me on the radio,
I don't know,
you'd do that. So what would your... crimes against radio broadcasting be?
Oh, I wish there are many. I don't know. We've done, and it's for other people to judge. Like, for example, I don't think it's possible for you to critique your own rubbishness. So, you know, the person with the whistly voice or the person with the dry voice, they got no idea. Otherwise, they'd do something about it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of just apologizing for eating my oat bar, and oats are the problem. It's like having a hobnob biscuit. It's the oats in there that if you do that before you're on the radio...
They require major mastication.
Oh, major mastication. Absolutely.
It's also like the thing about if you have kippers for breakfast, you have kippers for lunch and kippers for supper.
Yes,
because exactly. You are not getting that taste out of your mouth anytime soon.
It also seeps out of every pore.
Well, I see, I love kippers, but I can only ever have them in hotels because the good lady professor, her indoors, refuses to countenance them in the house.
She's very wise.
Yeah. But so you have to have it in the day. And once, and this is a heartbreaker to me, I was in the Isle of Man and I was staying in the Sefton, and my greatest pleasure on earth is kippers for breakfast in the Sefton. And I came down for breakfast. I was thinking I was doing Isle of Man Film Festival or something. And I sat down, I said, kippers, please. And they went, we haven't got any. And there was a moment I just thought, I'm going to go home.
You should have ordered breakfast like in the Phantom Thread.
My dad used to have, yeah, that's a lovely thing. And sausages and tomatoes, not jam, marmalade and toast. And when he goes
fantastic. Up, greatest breakfast order.
My dad on the ferry to the island from Liverpool in the morning, used to get the 8 o'clock ferry, used to have kippers and Guinness.
Really?
Yeah.
Kippers.
Man, that set you up for the day.
Oh, I don't think
that's
so.
Enough iron to see you through the whole of the next week.
So if you want to get your own back, of course, there is always, you could pay a visit to, because there's one quite near here, but if you have some Scandinavian stores near you, you could always go and get a tin of surströmming.
Which is what?
Which is officially, I think genuinely officially, the smelliest food in the world.
What's it called?
Surströmming. And it's basically pickled, I think it's pickled fish of some kind, pickled herring maybe, but... I did a whole thing about this when I was on the dark side, and we opened a can in the studio, but we were told by the health and safety folk that we had to do it outside of the studio and in a and in a room next door because the effect is it's a sulfurous smell, quite extraordinary. So if you know, you could say, well, kippers might be smelly, but try this.
What does it taste like?
Oh, we're not going to. It didn't get near tasting it.
Because quite often, I mean, there's like, you know, stinking bishop cheese. Isn't particularly flavoured. I mean, there's that weird thing that there are some very smelly cheeses that are actually quite bland when you taste them.
Well, anyway, if anyone has tasted surströmming, which I'm sure our international will have partaken of the aforementioned pickled fish, which is always a bad idea, in my opinion. But anyway, if you could do it and then let us know what it's all about.
I like a pickled herring. I mean, I'm not it's just thruming or whatever that is, but I do like a pickled herring.
For example, if we open the tin here now, we would actually have to stop the recording because...
And the smell is what? The smell is like...
It's a very concentrated, fierce, sulphurous. It's like a stink bomb, like six stink bombs going off in the studio all at once.
So eggy.
Yeah, sulphur. Yeah, eggy sulphur. Okay. Yeah, same thing.
Eggy is horrible.
Correspondence at conamayo.com if you have partaken of the surströmming delight.
Skyrockets in flight, surströmming delight.
Yeah, but that's, don't, because I'd probably, but afternoon delight, no.
Is it like the Dutch oven? Would it be like you were having some afternoon delight, but then you got Dutch ovened?
I have no idea about what a Dutch oven is, but it sounds very distasteful.
You know what a Dutch oven is?
No, what is a Dutch oven?
It's when you break wind under the duvet and then put the duvet over the head of the person.
Okay, well, slight gear change there. We've gone into very, very unusual territory. Who would do that?
I do a mad person, but it's a...
Also,
it's a
that
thing.
Sounds racist. What's it got to do with the...
I don't know.
The Dutch...
I don't know. I've never done it. No, because if I had done it, I'd be living on the streets.
You know all about it.
It's a phrase. It's almost certainly turned up in Viz.
Okay. Again, more subjects for next week's programme. Dr. K and Mr. MB from Jonathan in Leeds, newly minted listener, first time emailer. It's another Minions email, The Rise of Gru. I thought it was dumb. Not dumb enough to be remarkably dumb, just boringly dumb. It's not the worst thing I've seen in cinemas in the last month. It trumps the awful Jurassic Park Doe Minion. But it didn't engage me at all, particularly the parts with young Gru. I also didn't really find it funny, with the closest thing to a chuckle that it got out of me was a rousing rendition by the Minions of the Rolling Stones' You Can't Always Get What You Want. But that was mainly because I've so closely associated that song with the TV show House, which sits at the opposite end of the popular American pop culture spectrum. Maybe I'm just too much of a grumpy film snob, but I felt bored by the film as a whole, with it just feeling lazily written and unimaginative. Up with good movies and down with bad ones. Jonathan in Leeds, thank you.
In cooking, a Dutch oven is a type of heavy pot with a lid. But in slang, it is when you pass gas in bed and pull the covers over someone else's head, trapping it like a Dutch oven traps heat, from the intraweb.
I think the whole... I can only apologise for that utterly revolting
thing. I'm not endorsing it. I'm just saying that that's what it is.
But you brought it to our attention and I'd never even heard of that darn thing. One Frame Back, where we explore films that are connected in some ways to one of this week's releases. Yep. We're recommending sports documentaries inspired by Mark's review of McEnroe, a surprisingly crowded field or a thin field? What did...
There are more sports documentaries than perhaps one would have remembered, but the question is how many of them are memorable and good?
When I mentioned the McEnroe interview that I did on Greatest Hits, he says one of the... I said, why did you do a movie? And he said, because the people who are responsible also were responsible for the Amy Winehouse documentary, also responsible for Senna. And so he wanted to be... And he thought they were the two of the best documentaries that he'd seen. Obviously, yeah. One of those is a sports documentary. But you kind of think, okay, you were responsible for that?
The producer. Are they the same people that produced Diego Maradona for Asif Kapadia as well?
I imagine that is the case.
Because I mean, Asif, you know, Senna and I always want to call it Maradona, but it's called Diego Maradona, and that's the point, isn't it? Because there are two of him. There is Diego and there is Maradona. Are both very good sports documentaries if you don't like me, if you don't know much about sport.
And to be honest, and maybe this is getting to the heart of it, actually they're just good documentaries.
Yeah.
It happens to be that there is a sports person at the heart of it, or a music person. Yeah. So if you've never heard the music of Amy Winehouse, never heard of Amy Winehouse, that is still a brilliantly put together movie about a fiercely talented woman who died under tragic circumstances, but it's just a good documentary.
Yeah. Yeah, it is also a savage indictment of popular culture's treatment of people who are suffering from mental health issues.
Ruthie says, one of the best surely has to be the utterly brilliant Senna. There you go, we've already mentioned it. As the good doctor has often said, a good documentary will keep you interested, even if you have no knowledge on the subject. To this end, Some years ago, I sat rather grudgingly with my Formula One fan husband to watch Senna. Had me hooked from the very start. I found it completely thrilling. The dazzling display of talent, jaw-dropping, and so terribly, desperately sad with that incredible achievement, which I think was referenced last week or the week before, where you get to the point where you know Senna is going to die in the next race and you're saying, get out of the car. Yeah, come on, get out of the car. Michael Perry says, hoop, dreams and murder ball. Fargo Boyle, Maradona, frenetic beginning with a fantastic insight into his life on and off the pitch. I went from feeling cheated all over again by his hand of God. I watched the game on TV in 86 to feeling somewhat sorry for him as things turned sour in Italy. Great way to capture his life. Jeff Thomas says, Tokyo Olympiad from 1965 by Kon Ichikawa. At 3 hours long, both a cinematic experience and an endurance test, no narration, each sport presented in a way as its own short film subject. The ending marathon sequence is gripping. Jeff, thank you for that. Thanks for all the correspondence. That's some of the correspondence we've had for Sports Docs. What is your choice for this week's One Frame Back and where can people see it?
Well, there are some great suggestions there. However, it will surprise nobody to know that, you know, my answer to this would be the 2014 film Next Goal Wins, which is a British documentary about the national football team of American Samoa, who have earned the reputation of being like one of the worst teams in terms of their league achievements, and they just want to do better. And they get in a new coach, and you are introduced to the members of the team, and what begins as a documentary about a failing football team becomes a documentary about life in all its wonderful richness and diversity. And I've said this when I reviewed the film when it first came out, I genuinely found myself punching the air in delight whilst watching Next Goal Wins. Now, there is a feature film based on Next Goal Wins coming, I think it's due next year, written and directed by Taika Waititi, who of course made Thor, Love and Thunder, which I don't like at all, but he also made Hunt for the Wilder People, which I absolutely love. And I really want this to be great. It stars Michael Fassbender, Elizabeth Moss, and a whole bunch of others. And I would love the film to be great because it's such a great story. But whether it's good or bad, what I want it to do is direct people back to that 2014 documentary, Next Goal Wins, which I cannot recommend highly enough. It's one of those films like Heavy Load, which is a, you know, music documentary, but it's about so much more than that. It doesn't matter how much or how little you're interested in the sport. It's genuinely uplifting and brilliant. And it's almost as if the filmmakers stumbled upon a story that they could not possibly have imagined would have resonated in the way that it did. It's very, very well made, but it's the little film that can, and it's lovely. It's so great.
And I can see that pretty much everywhere.
It's available on Widely Available.
Excellent. I think I subscribe to Widely Available, $5.95 a month or something like that. Next week, Mark is going to be reviewing Where the Crawdads Sing. In fact, Daisy Edgar-Jones is going to be our guest.
And you've seen it. I haven't yet. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and so I think we should look at picks for movies from the Deep South. Deep South, shot around the Deep South, reflecting the Deep South.
Yes. Wow, that's actually a terrific. That's a very good category.
There's lots of them.
Yeah.
So your suggestions, please, for what to put in One Frame Back on Deep South movies, correspondence at kermitandmayo.com. Now, for You Decide, this is obviously our word of mouth feature, and there is so much media around. Obviously, we miss out loads of stuff because it's just not physically capable to catch up with everything. But if you feel strongly about a particular series or movie that you've seen somewhere that we've missed, then get in touch. This week's You Decide has been suggested by loads of people. Here's Elena in Birmingham. I'm hoping Mark will cast his eye over Mike Flanagan's utterly gripping horror series Midnight Mass on Netflix. It's an exploration of guilt, family, faith, loss, and eternal life. With across-the-board great performances, in particular, Hamish Linklater as Father Paul Hill, the enigmatic new priest at St. Patrick's Church on Crockett Island, and Samantha Sloyan as church lady Bev Keane. To say more is to spoil it, but I would imagine this series is so far up Mark Street that it comes out the other side. And Alina finishes by saying, I don't think I'll ever sing Nearer My God to Thee in quite the same way again. So, Alina, first of all, it's a top recommendation because I've seen the series and it is brilliant. But also, she's set it up without spoiling anything, which is very interesting. So Midnight Mass.
Okay, so here's the situation with this. I knew nothing about Midnight Mass at all before. I did know Mike Flanagan's name because I had really loved Oculus when it came out. And I thought Dr. Sleep was really terrific as well. And I was aware of the fact that William Friedkin, obviously director of The Exorcist, had tweeted in great praise of Hush and said that, He said, it's a great horror film. And then Mike Flanagan replied saying, you know, wow, coming from you, that really means something. So I knew that's a good pedigree. So this starts with a drunk driver causing a fatal crash from which he emerges with only scratches. And when he sees what he's done, he starts praying. And one of the medics on the scene says, while you're doing that, why don't you ask him why people like you always get off with just scratches, but he takes the kids. That's the beginning.
Punchy start.
Yeah, exactly. And it actually is a great start, isn't it? Some years later, I think it's 4 years later, he returns to his isolated home of Crockett Island, which is kind of like a twisted gothic version of Amity Island from Jaws. It's home to another drunk who put a local girl in a wheelchair in what was described as a hunting accident. Because everyone said it wasn't a hunting accident. He was drunk and he had a gun. And then there is a preacher played by
Hamish Linklater,
who I'd seen him in some things, I think, but I didn't really know much about him. And he's a charismatic new preacher. The previous Monsignor is off the island, and we know that we're not quite sure why he's off the island, but it's apparently he's not coming back. And the new preacher appears in the first three episodes to at least enable some form of miracle. And incidentally, what's happening is like biblical plagues, because there is a storm in the first couple of episodes in which a load of dead cats wash up on the beach. And there's a scene that's actually quite reminiscent of Jaws. And we go, oh, yes, it's fine. Well, at least it's got all the cats out. That's marvelous.
Never a good sign.
Yeah. I'm going, no, really, you need to take this seriously. This is a bad thing. And it's going to be plagues of frogs next. And apparently this is a passion project for Flanagan. He first wrote it as a novel, then thought it would be a film, then a TV series. It was turned down for ages until Haunting of Hill House, and then subsequently Haunting of Bly Manor did very well. And I said to Simon Poole when he said, watch this, I said, okay, I've got time to do two episodes. He said, you'll watch more. And I did. I watched three, and I literally ran out of time. And here's what I want to say about it. I really want to watch the rest of them, and one of the things with this feature is that I'm three or four episodes into something and then we're on to the next thing. So what we're going to do for the first time, because yesterday when I was at your house, I said, oh, I've been watching this. And you said, I watched it. And I immediately said, okay, don't. But you really liked it, okay?
I absolutely loved
it. So what I'm going to ask you to do now is to say something about it without, bearing in mind, I'm on episode three. And then by next week, I'm going to watch the rest of it. Because firstly, it is a limited series.
Oh, listen.
What a lovely sound that.
The word limited is now my favorite word in any series, because it tells you immediately that it's just this. If it's six episodes, it's just six. We're not going to come back with another eight, which you never wanted in the first place. We have one story. We're going to tell the one story and then we're going to stop. And I think it was one of my favorite TV series of last year. I think I watched it last year. There are so many great things. Maybe we'll do a sort of a spoilery thing next week.
Yes.
Because I think it's impossible to review 4, 5, and 6 without sort of talking about where it goes.
Okay. But one of the things that's interesting for me is this. I'm at the end of episode 3 and I don't know where it's going. I don't yet know where it's going. What I know is that it has a mixture of things that's like a cocktail that was tailor-made for me. So it's religion, faith, guilt, internecine rural community rivalries, apparent miracles and plagues. I mean, it's
and
like
Neil Diamond
in and the Neil first, Diamond
and Neil Diamond
and a touch of Jaws.
Yes.
I mean, if somebody had sat down and thought, yeah, you know, I'd like to get Kermode's attention. What am I going to do? This is exactly, you know, what you would have done. And I think it's so far, it's got me absolutely gripped. And what I really, really want to do now is to do the rest of it and go, okay, fine, that's brilliant. And then you and I talk about it. What else of Mike Flanagan's had you seen? Did you see the series of The Haunting of Hill House?
No.
Or Haunting of Bly
Manor? To be honest, I wasn't going to watch this because I'm not a horror fan, as you know. But enough people said to me, you've really, really got to see it. And I think it's very, I mean, as our correspondent Elena in Birmingham says, Hamish Linklater, who I think is related to the Scottish journalist Magnus Linklater.
Oh, not Richard Linklater, the filmmaker.
I don't think he's part of that, although, you know, who knows? But I think his performance as Father Paul is so brilliant, even just based, so we're just talking about the first three series, is so nuanced that you're thinking, okay, well, I get a sense that all is not well, but he's a great priest. And you can, you, if you went, if you lived on that island and you went to that church, you go, okay, yeah.
No,
I can imagine. I would go, and I'll tell my friends, "You got to come because this guy, he's the real deal."
There's a scene in the episodes I've seen so far in which the central character, who had, you know, who was the drink driver, and now goes to, as part of his conditions for release, is he has to go to the mainland to go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and the priest says, "Look, you don't have to. I could set up an AA chapter here, and I could do it with you." And then it cuts to them, the two of them sitting in a church hall. And he goes, "Yeah, I admit I underestimated how awkward this would be." And it's a really lovely human moment. And the confession scene in which he says, "Forgive me, for I have sinned. I am going to sin." And then he explains that what he's going to do is he's going to lie about what's happened to his predecessor. And he says, "I'm going to do it for the benefit of the community." And it's really well done. And I don't know where this is going.
When the spaceship lands, it's going to blow your mind. And then they all speak German. It's a very kind of unusual thing.
Okay.
So next week
we will catch up. And our discussion next week will be spoilery.
Yes.
So if you want to listen to that and you haven't yet seen Midnight Mass,
we'll give you plenty of warning next week.
But also, maybe watch it between now and then.
Maybe watch it,
because
exactly.
It is actually manageable to do, yeah, it, because it is. Let's sing it loud.
It's
a limited series.
But also, if you have seen it, because as I said, it came out a while ago, let us know what you thought about it, because I think...
love to know.
Midnight Mass is going to be well worth discussion. Part two on next week's...
Take It or Leave It.
Take It or Leave It. Anyway, drop us a note, correspondence@curbitomeo.com. I'm looking forward to that.
Good.
Already. In fact, it makes me want to go back and watch the series all over again.
Well, the thing that's excited me is that when I said to you I was going to watch it, you went, "Oh, I loved it. I absolutely loved it." And it's great, because it's often when you're at episode three of something, somebody who's seen the whole of it to go, "Oh, it's great," rather than go, "Yeah, it really tails off after that."
Yeah, that is awful. Or here's the other worst thing that you could say. So let's say there's a
Has so-and-so died yet?
No, so let's say there's a new series called Apple and Raisin Oat Bar. And so it says, "Have you seen it?" Yeah, I really love it. You need to give it till season three, and then it really takes off. No. If I have to sit through any more than three episodes and it's not working, I am going to stop. It's like reading a book. How many pages do you give it? Maximum 100. No one gets to the end of the book and goes, "Well, that was rubbish."
Yeah, somebody tweeted the show to say that they had heard me say of Blackbird, I heard Mark Kermode say that the first two characters, the two central characters don't meet until episode three, and I thought, "I'm not doing it." No, episodes one and two are great. They are great, even before they meet. Episodes one and two are great. Oh. It's not like nothing happens till episode three. It's great.
Yeah. Yes, it's absolutely not a criticism. It's just the way they've constructed a story.
And it means that when they meet, it's like... If you said, "I'm not going to watch that Heat because Robert De Niro and Al Pacino don't meet until an hour and 20 minutes into the movie."
I watched that again this week.
Oh, why? Because it had just been reissued.
No, it was just on and available. And I thought, okay, Quiet House, because the whole family has disappeared. I don't mean mysteriously. They haven't disappeared. It's not some kind of, where have they gone? I don't need to tell the police or anything like that. I know where they are. So I watched it again. And that first scene where they meet, which is Pacino has flagged down Robert De Niro, yeah, and he just says, "Hi, you know, should we go for a coffee?"
In the coffee shop.
It's great, isn't it? Yeah. It's just really terrific.
And the shootout scene in which they built the intersection.
Right at the end.
Yeah, because it's like, it's not right at the end, but it's, you know, it's big set piece when they have the thing. And I remember thinking, how on earth did they do it? Oh, that's how they did it. They just built the whole, you know,
which is fantastic.
Junction.
Anyway, it's available. That's on a streaming service, so you can watch it at any stage.
Great.
But it is absolutely terrific.
Also, it features Val Kilmer in uncharacteristically understated form. And I interviewed Michael Mann about that film, and he said Val Kilmer loved that film so much that he would turn up on days that he wasn't needed just to watch the other actors.
That is true. No, and you're absolutely right. He does put in a great performance. So the whole idea of Take It or Leave It is obviously it's word of mouth stuff that you're a huge fan of, and you think we might be as well. And if there's something that you've been watching that's grabbed your attention, let us know. correspondence@curbitomeo.com. That's it for take two. I think everyone's had enough. Well, I've had enough anyway.
Leave them wanting more.
I feel a Dutch oven coming on.
Where's the fart gun when you need it?